morning's reading is from Exodus chapter 16, verses 1 to 21. Manna and quail. The whole Israelite community set out from Elim and came to the desert of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they had come out of Egypt. In the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat round pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you have brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death." Then the Lord said to Moses, "I will rain down bread from heaven for you. The people are to go out each day and gather enough for that day. In this way I will test them and see whether they will follow my instructions. On the sixth day they are to prepare what they bring in, and that is to be twice as much as they gather on the other days." So Moses and Aaron said to the Israelites, "In the evening you will know that it was the Lord who brought you out of Egypt, and in the morning you will see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your grumbling against him. Who are we that you should grumble against us?" Moses also said, "You will know that it was the Lord that gave that the Lord when he gives you meat to eat in the evening and all the bread that you want in the morning, because he has heard your grumbling against him. Who are we? You are not grumbling against us, but against the Lord." Then Moses told Aaron, "Say to the entire Israelite community, 'Come before the Lord, for he has heard your grumbling.'" While Aaron was speaking to the whole Israelite community, they looked towards the desert, and there was the glory of the Lord appearing in the cloud. The Lord said to Moses, "I have heard the grumbling of the Israelites. Tell them, 'At twilight you will eat meat, and in the morning you will be filled with bread. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God.'" That evening, quail came and covered the camp, and in the morning there was a layer of dew around the camp. When the dew was gone, thin flakes like frost on the ground appeared on the desert floor. When the Israelites saw it, they said to each other, "What is this?" For they did not know what it was. Moses said to them, "It is the bread that the Lord has given you to eat. This is what the Lord has commanded. Everyone is to gather as much as they need. Take an omer for each person you have in your tent." The Israelites did as they were told. Some gathered much, some little. And when they measured it by the omer, which is about 3 pounds in weight, the one who gathered much did not have too much, and the one who gathered little did not have too little. Everyone had gathered just as much as they needed. Then Moses said to them, "No one is to keep any of it until morning." However, some of them paid no attention to Moses. They kept part of it until morning, but it was full of maggots and began to smell. So Moses was angry with them. Each morning, everyone gathered as much as they needed, and when the sun grew hot, it melted away. This is the word of the Lord.
Shall we pray together? Speak, Lord, in the stillness, while we wait on thee, and hush our hearts to listen with expectancy. Amen. Well, fasten your seatbelts. Welcome aboard the maiden flight of this curate in his new placement church. I'll tell you something of the flight path we're about to take. For most of our flight, we'll be hovering somewhere over chapter 16 of Exodus, where there are, as you have just heard, some reports of turbulence. But we will be then coming into land, crossing the international boundary, landing at St. John's Gospel Airport, International Airport. If you need them, the emergency exits are behind you or to your right. I wonder if you have in your house a Holy of Holies. What do I mean by that? As I grew up as a child, we had in our house a Holy of Holies. It was the place where my father went occasionally to do his paperwork. It wasn't quite a room, it was just off my parents' room behind a wardrobe. But that was the Holy of Holies. It's not where we were expected or allowed to play. But occasionally we'd be allowed in and we'd sit with him and we'd open the bottom right-hand drawer of his desk and get out one or two of the things in there. There were, as there were in many desk drawers probably before we filled them all with phone chargers, a random selection of things. And one of the things would be one of those old dynamo machines, remember from doing labels, where you had the plastic tape on a reel and you had to turn the dial to the letter you wanted and then you squeezed with all your might and eventually you'd get a few letters and you realize you'd spelt it wrong. Or you would if you're dyslexic like me. Actually, normally someone else would tell me I'd spelt it wrong rather than realize it for myself. In our bottom drawer, in this Holy of Holies, there were one or two things that we would get out on these occasions. And one of them might be something that my father had been given by his grandmother or by his mother. And he'd tell me, this is one of those things that reminds me of a day when we did this. Or it might have been a photograph. I wonder what you keep in your bottom drawers. And if you were telling the next generation, you'll say, that was the day when so-and-so came to visit or when such-and-such happened. At the end of our reading, after the bit that John read for us, we read that after this story of manna in the wilderness, they collected some of the manna, and some of it was put later in the Holy of Holies. Only three things went into the to the ark or next to the ark. And we haven't come to them yet. This is the first one. The first was this jar of manna. And you'll read it, I think it's verse 32, after what John read to us. 32, 33, 34. They collect the manna so that the next generation may know. The second thing was Aaron's rod, the rod that came and came to life, came to bud. And the third thing, of course, was the Ten Commandments. Those three things in the Holy of Holies. And those are three of the foundational things that we find in the Holy of Holies because they speak to the generations of the Israelite people about the greatness of God. And so as we come to chapter 16, we are going to be looking at one of those passages that ends up in the Holy of Holies that gives us something that is going to be passed on through the generations. So let's just remind ourselves of where we've been. Week one of this series, we had Steve giving us an overview. Week two, we stood with Sarah on the shores of the Red Sea, considering the way that God would take us. Week three, we were encouraged last week with Corinne to be people of praise, people who recognized that they had crossed safely over the Red Sea and that God had brought them out of Egypt. Well, when we get to chapter 16, we've jumped just a few verses, so let me just fill those in. After that praise session on the banks of the Red Sea, they set off. They have a slight grumbling session with a bit of trouble with water that Moses and God sort out between them, where bitter water is turned sweet. And then they stop at an oasis where there are springs of water and palm trees. And then they set off again. And we get to the beginning of chapter 16. And then we get to the grumbling. And in verse 2, we hear of turbulence. The whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. If only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you have brought us out into this desert that we can starve to death. Starve to death the whole assembly. Just a quick check back in case you probably are thinking, that's not what I quite remember. Chapter 1 of Exodus, they are slaves in Egypt. The Egyptians are described as ruthless. They had made the Israelites' lives bitter. Chapter 2, the Israelites are groaning and crying out for help. Chapter 3 speaks of the misery that they were in Israel. And as the story goes on, it only got worse and worse. And so they are grumbling. Now in the desert, grumbling and misremembering. The praise session that Corin talked to us about last week is forgotten. Grumbling has set in. I don't know about you, but by the time I got to the end of those opening verses, I was beginning to get a little bit nervous about how God was going to react, probably because my parenting would probably tell you how I would react when my children grumbled. But as John read the story and as we heard it together, I wonder if you were struck by the fact that if we thought God was going to be angry at the grumbling, we were wrong. I wonder what you thought about that. The fact that God reveals at the time of their grumbling just how merciful and compassionate he is. The psalmist puts it so well. The Lord is gracious and compassionate, slow to anger and rich in love. And when we look at the situation in the round, perhaps we begin to think about what was actually going on for people. Despite their grumblings, these are hungry people. They are in a desert with no food. I know that when I get hungry, I grumble too. But Tesco is just round the corner, and I've only got 20 minutes to wait until something is ready for me in the oven. And in contrast to this story, the Israelites are in the desert. No doubt their children are beyond fractious. There doesn't look to be an easy way out. Their sugar levels have dropped. They are hangry, and their reactions are perhaps very human and not surprising. But I want you to go beyond that and ask, what is going on beyond the grumbling, behind the grumbling? Their genuine fear, despondency, loss of hope, doubt, faith stretched even to or beyond breaking point. And perhaps we remember too moments like that when we expect God to be angry because of our own lack of faith. I'm sure we've all had times when we have doubted and struggled and we feel we're not good enough for God, not good enough for God's blessing. Times when we have been despondent, losing hope, feeling that we are letting God down. And yet it is in those moments that we hear again that verse from the Psalms, the Lord is gracious and compassionate, slow to anger and rich in love. God is big enough to see past our weakness. We often use a verse at funerals that says this: God knows of what we are formed. He remembers that we are but dust. And I think sometimes we need to pull it out of the funeral service and remind ourselves of that verse a little more often. We are just dust. God knows of what we are made. And that is why he is compassionate, slow to anger, and rich in love. So is it all right to have doubts, those underlying doubts underneath the grumbling? Is it all right to have doubts as a Christian? Well, my response to that is this: yes, yes, and up to a point. The first yes is this: being honest with God, being honest about ourselves, is not the end of our relationship with God. It can often be a new beginning. Look at Exodus 16 that we've just had read to us. It is when the Israelites have their doubts that God provides manna in the wilderness. When they are unable to see the way ahead, that God meets and provides for them. Think of Thomas in the New Testament, famous for his doubts. Does God wait until he's worked it out before he comes to meet him? No. It is because of his doubts that Jesus comes a week after Easter Day to see Thomas and invites him to address those doubts with Jesus. And despite being a Christian really all my life, from the moment that I remember sitting on my mother's knee and her praying with me as I was going to sleep, I can still look back only 10 years ago when I was struggling with my faith. And I would sit in church, semi-detached, wondering if it was all delusional madness, wondering what I did believe, wondering if it would be better if I just walked away. And two things helped me at the time. The first was the prayer from the Iona community. If you were at the evening service last week, you will have heard me read it just before we took communion, where we are invited to God's table to meet with him. And it says this, "Come, you who have much faith." Well, I was sitting in church thinking, that's not me. And then it goes on, "Come, those of you who would like to have more." And that rather put me on the spot. Did I want to have faith? It's quite a poignant question when you have doubts, because it rather determines quite a lot about those doubts, doesn't it? Do you want to have faith? And the prayer goes on, well, if you do, come to the table, because Jesus would meet you there. My second yes to is it all right to have doubts is this, because I think sometimes we all get our theology upside down. We so often tell ourselves that only when we believe this much, or is it this much, or if it's only this much, that then God will meet with us. But it's not about our faith. It is about God's faithfulness. It's not about how much faith we have, but it is God's faithfulness. And it was as I began to realize that when I was having my own doubts, that it wasn't, did I believe enough for God to meet with me? But that God reveals himself in his faithfulness, that he could draw me back. So yes and yes. And then is it all right? Well, it's all right up to a point. And I think there is a point at which doubt becomes combined with pride. I'm so proud that I don't believe, that my heart is getting harder. And if that's the point where you're at, then think hard about it, because God invites us to meet with him, to address our doubts. But not if we are shut to hearing his voice. Anyway, let's get back to the story. Let's get back to the story, because as we've seen, the Israelites were in the wilderness. They were finding it hard to believe that God hadn't abandoned them. And I was wondering, why? Why were they finding it hard? Only about a few weeks ago, they had crossed over the Red Sea. It was as if this aisle down the middle of the church had been pushed apart and they had walked through the waters. Why would they find it difficult to believe in God? And as I was thinking about that, I wondered if it was this, that the big events might help us to believe that God can provide. But it's actually the little events day by day that build our trust in God, that help us to believe that he will provide. The big events help us to know that he can do it. But the little steps day by day help us to know that he will provide. And at the time, only a few weeks after they've gone through the Red Sea, the relationship between God and the Israelites is still quite rudimentary. It's quite unformed. And so God reveals himself here by providing to them. And so let's have a quick look at the provision that he provides. Look at the blessings. Six very quick things. One, God reveals his nature. He reveals his blessings in his abundance and generosity, his faithful reliability. That's what these blessings are all about. God is revealing his nature. I will rain down bread. Starts with quails, moves on to manna. And it's day by day in the pattern that God provides. And there's an editorial note, another editorial note at the end of the chapter, in which it talks about the people of Israel eating manna day by day until they reach the promised land, mentioned again at the beginning of Joshua, day by day. Second is this: God's blessings are good surprises and often of a new, unforeseen way. New substances on the ground, not the bread that they were used to eating. What is it? Was the question. That's where the word manna comes from. If you speak Hebrew, I don't. You might just have to read it in English about what it says, but there it is, you know. That was the word, what is it? The word what is it has the same pronunciation as manna. What is it that God is giving us? Thin flakes like frost. Elsewhere it says, white like coriander seeds, tasting of wafers made with honey. Good things. A foretaste of a land of milk and honey. Third, nothing in this was conditional. Not a single thing in this story was conditional. We didn't earn the manna. It was a pure gift from God. And nothing that God wishes to pour on us is conditional. He's not holding it back. Fourth, there's enough for all in the community. God's blessing is not just for some here and there. It's not take a measure, and we'll keep that. Bit of a gap over here, a few more faithful people over there being blessed. It was for the whole community. Moses said, go out, collect a measure of manna for each person you have in your tent. And I'm sure there were people in the tents who weren't physically able to go out and collect for themselves. People who were too young or too frail of whatever age. And when God gives us blessings, he gives enough for all, but he sometimes asks us to ensure that there is enough to go round. It says a beautiful verse in the reading that they collected, and those who collected a lot didn't have too much, and those who collected a little didn't have too little. And Paul picks that up in the New Testament in 2 Corinthians. And it speaks so much, doesn't it, of looking after each other with God's blessings. Of noticing who needs some of what I have. Of noticing that sometimes I will need to receive from what other people have been given. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. 5, sorry, is this. What's 1, 2, 3, and 4? This is 5. The blessings of God in the wilderness, the manna were given in a way which built trusting relationship. Daily bread. We hear it in the Lord's Prayer, don't we? It is daily bread. Not to be hoarded. It doesn't come in great big lumps that we can then squirrel away so that we can depend on our own skills at collecting and storing. It is the pattern of God's giving to give gently day by day. In a pattern, 5 days, each day enough for itself. 6th day, enough for 2 days. And a 7th day's rest. Grace and rest come from God. Building a relationship that is new every morning. Do you remember that song? New every morning is new. The love of God for me is wonderfully new. Or perhaps a more modern song, sufficient for the day. Give us this day our daily bread. Well, there's the story in a nutshell. A story for a particular time, for a particular need, in a particular place, but one with endless, timeless truth. Part of God's nature revealed. Abundant generosity. Blessings coming in surprising new ways. What is it? What is God doing now? What is God doing amongst us? Blessings that are unconditional, undeserved, unearned. Blessings that are enough for all that we are to hold lightly and with generosity. God's blessings given in a pattern that includes rest and builds relationships of trust. So we looked at the beginning at the grumbling. We looked at the end at the blessing. The best is in the middle. 2 verses that I've skipped over quite deliberately so that I could come back to them. What was it that linked the grumbling to the blessing? It was Moses calling the people together before God. If you read verses 9 and 10, if you get home and want to do it again there, Moses says, come before the Lord. Come as a community, the whole lot of you, come before the Lord. Even when you're grumbling. Even when you can't see the way ahead. come. And they looked, and there was the glory of the Lord appearing as a cloud. Where did they look to see the glory of the Lord? It wasn't back to Egypt, to where they had been before. It wasn't even to the oasis that they had successfully camped by and received springs and a bit of refreshment a little while ago. It was over the desert. God was over the desert. That's where they were. God was with them in the desert. God was not holding them back to the past, but saying, I am with you in the most difficult of situations here in the desert. And that is the message of the gospel foreshadowed in this story. Never abandoned by God. God present with us when we are at our lowest ebb, hoping for a relationship. God is waiting for us to lift our eyes, to come together to worship him. And as we move into the New Testament and we understand God's presence in a wholly new way, God present with us in Jesus in incarnation, in the vulnerability of the child in a manger. God staying with us, at the crucifixion, whatever it takes, never abandoning us. God coming to us with new life of resurrection. God ever with us as he allows his spirit to dwell within us and to change us. John chapter 6, verse 51. Because this is where we meet with God. Jesus says, I am the living bread that came from heaven. Whoever eats this bread will live forever. This bread is my flesh, which I give for the life of the world. I am the living bread, Jesus says. Your ancestors ate manna and died, but whoever feeds on me, whoever eats of this bread, will live forever. So where is your Holy of Holies? Not the dynamo in your cupboard, but your stories of Jesus that you store away to hand on to the next generation. We can all do that. We can all remember times when God was so close to us, and we need to file that away somehow for our bottom drawer. Not for us, but for the next generations. And we need to sit with our children and with our grandchildren, with our nieces and our nephews, and we need to tell them the stories. The times when I became a Christian. The times when I was losing hope and God did this for me. The times when I just knew God was there. Have you got those stories? Have you got a Holy of Holies where you can hide them away in order to tell them to the next generation? I hope you have. I think of testimonies as one of those things. If God is like a river and the stepping stones in the river, and the steps can be quite a long way apart for people, testimony of what we have experienced can just move the stones a little bit closer. Everybody has to cross, has to take their own path across the stepping stones. We can't make the next generation, we can't make our friends believe, but our testimony, our day-by-day witness of what God does for us, moves the stepping stones closer. So that their first steps of faith, or their next steps of faith, aren't too far a stretch, but are actually quite natural, because they've seen it in you, in our church family. Let's just pray together. God of compassion, thank you that you so gracefully give to us so much. And that above all, you have given yourself that you may always be with us. Help us in those times of doubt, those times of struggle, to draw together as a community and to see where you are and to find you in the midst of us. Give us those stories to store in our bottom drawers, that we may speak of your love from one generation to the next. Amen.